Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the Business Book Podcast. So I'm pretty honored today that our guest is Ray Bard. So before I give you his professional background, let me tell you how he doesn't even realize that he's personally connected to me. So one of the other guests on the season, on my podcast this season, is Roy Williams, the Wizard of Ads. Now, Roy was my virtual mentor. He didn't even know he was my mentor. But whenever I first got into the writing business, I was a copywriter. And Roy, the Wizard of Ads, and his books, The Wizard of Ads, The Secret of Ads, or Secrets of the Wizard of Ads, I mean, those were some of my Bibles. They were my guiding ideas on how a copywriter should approach the business. Well, it just so happens that my virtual mentor, Roy, one of his mentors is Ray Bard. So Ray is not only Roy's mentor, but also Roy's publisher. So Ray published Roy's early books, The Wizard of Ads, through his company, Bard Press. Now, Bard Press is it's one of the most exclusive business publishers in the business. Now, they've, in 13 years, Ray, through Bard Press, has published 7 books. Half of them have been on bestsellers list. 2 have sold more than 1 million copies, including one of my own favorite books. Actually, I read it before I even realized that it was published by Bard Press. So the one thing, and if you're in any kind of a business or sales, you've come across the one thing, incredible book. Then also, if you're in business anywhere, you've probably also come across The Little Red Book of Selling. It's the best-selling sales book of all time, more than 3 million copies sold. Also published through Bard Press. But his latest book was a personal hobby of his that he has turned into a beautiful book. It's called Fired Up Selling, Great Quotes to Inspire, Energize, and Succeed. And even though it has selling in the title, y'all, I'm holding a copy in my hand, and it is so much more than just a sales book. It is a life inspiration book. So if you love quotes at all, if you like being inspired, if you like being motivated, and if you love going through and just reading beautiful words, you owe it to yourself to go grab a copy of Fired Up Selling. So Ray graciously agreed to be on the show today. To talk about, I invited him because I'd like him to talk about this book, but more in general, the whole idea of whenever we're in the publishing business, whenever we're writing, how do we think about the most important person in the room? And that person is, of course, our reader. So all of that to say, Ray, welcome to the show, and thank you for your time.
Derek, it's great to be with you today. And let me go back and do just a brief addendum to what you said about Roy and I.
Please.
Roy is as much my mentor as he is mine. I've learned so much of Roy over the years. You know, one of the great luxuries of my publishing model is I only publish so few books. I think maybe 30 over, many years. And because of that, when a lot of these, authors I've published 2 and 3. I think I've published 5 of Roy's books, 4 or 5 of Roy's books. And so it's been my great pleasure to get to know these people, and some of these are some of my closest friends also. So, and I've learned so much from Roy, reading his Monday morning memo and obviously reading his books because I was involved in publishing them. So I just want to make sure to clarify that. And so let's go back to the selling part. And I don't know when, it's been many years now, I began to think, I have a sales background a long, long time ago, and then I published a number of sales and marketing books. And when you think about selling itself, you know, there's the Daniel Pink book, you know, where he's in the book, he talks, you know, he says we're all in sales now. And
right.
And Robert Louis Stevenson, you know, 100 years ago or more longer, said everyone lives by selling something. And so we're, if whether or not we're doing it verbally or whether or not we're doing it in print, we're in the persuasion business. And I think when you think about us as authors, whether or not we have someone working for us, like a publisher, or whether or not we're self-publishing, our first sales job is to sell the book, is to get someone to take it home and read it. And so that's our big sale. If that doesn't happen, and so there you get back to the design of the cover, the title, and the subtitle, and that's another whole conversation sometime, Derek, about choosing those, because those may check a, you know, that's what I call the first editorial dot. And that's the big dot that you connect throughout the book about all the other editorial or content pieces. And so the so I begin to think about what are we really selling when we're selling books. And very quickly, it was obvious to me that we're not selling paper or ink or any of that, you know, what constitutes a book. We're really selling information. You know, that was the first very obvious thing. Okay, we're selling information, concepts, ideas, and so on. And my next conclusion pretty quickly was, well, a lot of people don't pay a whole lot just for information. There's something more that they want. And what struck me next was, dealing with a lot of business books and personal development books, areas that I publish in, it occurred to me that there, we're selling how-to. And when you look at diet books, almost all, a great number of business books and personal development books, you know, there's seven habits. You know, when you go down the long list of books that have numbers in them, which you know, give you steps or phases to go through. And when, and the promise that you're making in the book, usually in the book title, is if you give me 20 or 25 bucks, you know, and follow this, you know, follow my quote program, you'll get this result. So people were looking for results, essentially. And then, you know, what, you know, finally really hit me, and this is the big thing that people are really looking for. They're looking for hope. They're looking, if you give them information and show them how to do something, they're hoping that your promise is true. That when they do that, that they hope for change. Not only change, but positive change. If it's a diet book, they hope to lose 30 pounds or whatever it is. There's no, it's not a joke, but an old cliche in the book business. You know, the very big ocean of books are for diet, sex, and money. And almost all of those have, you know, how, those are all how-to, those are almost all how-to books. And so when you're looking, if you're an author and you're looking for big, you know, felt need, you know, where people, you know, it's a big ocean of, ocean market there, you know, think diet, sex, and money. Of course, business books, you know, fit into money. Almost all business books, I think, in their broadest sense of the word, are helping people to become, you know, more, to help improve their financial life. And so it's, we're selling hope. And if we're not selling hope in a book, if we're not selling hope in a business book or a personal development book, we're in trouble. I think it's we're not really selling information. Information by itself just doesn't have a whole lot of value, and so the last one I had to, I used these three when I do workshops and seminars and stuff and working with my clients. I used these three a long time, and I kept thinking, well, there has to be one other, because I would see books like Freakonomics. You know, there's not, you know, there's information there. You know, there's certainly. There's no steps in Freakonomics. They don't give you any seven-step plans or the five keys or any of that. And there's not a lot of hope, you know, in Freakonomics. Or if you look at Gladwell's book, and if you look at Tipping Point, and if you look at, I'm walking over to my shelf now, if you look at Blink, I think Blink is about 350 pages long. It's a chubby book. And so, you know, it has some of those in it, but there's certainly not a lot of how-to in Blink. So I began to think of those, and what clicked for me then is we're selling entertainment. And so when you think, when we read Freakonomics, you know, those are fun to read. I mean, they've almost always got a back end twist, and they make us think. If we're curious, they give us some surprises. They're kind of counterintuitive and oddities. But when you look at Gladwell too, I think that's where you get into the style in writing and really being a good writer, a good wordsmith. And I think it's a reason for a writer to really develop your craft is to keep becoming a better writer. And the way to do that is obviously to write. And because Gladwell is a pleasure to read, because it's his stylistic ability, he's a pleasure to read. And so when I work with authors and work on a book or encourage other people to begin to think about them, I ask them to go back and to look at those four different chunks: information, hope, results, and entertainment, and to see what their mix is, to see whether or not they have enough entertainment in there, or certainly whether or not they have enough hope in there.
You know, and one thing that I forgot to introduce is that you shared this kind of summary of these things, and for everyone listening, I'll put it in the show notes so that you can see how Ray has it laid out here: information, hope, results, and pleasure. And then he's got the method, but I love the other column he has up here about the tools and techniques. So all the different ways that you can convey information, all the different ways that you can convey hope, the different ways that you can present solutions, and the different ways that you can make it pleasurable or entertaining or interesting.
So when you think,
one of the,
Derek, I'm sorry, Derek, I was going to ask you a question. I was going to flip the interview table. From you have a huge amount of writing experience. When I go on your website and look at all the books you've worked on, you know, that's just so impressive.
Thank you.
And so when you've worked on with all these authors over the years, does that ring true to you to be able to look and to do some analysis early on as you're beginning to develop that manuscript about whether or not you have all these different elements?
You know, I mean, now that I have this tool, I can frame it like that. But the shorthand for me, or I guess kind of the first couple of steps I took down this road, is I would always tell my authors that great business books, and that's really what we're going for whenever I work with someone. We don't just want something that just has their name on the cover, something that just provides some information. We want a great business book. That's the goal. And great business books are both informative, so that there's actual value there. It's not just something that you read and it's like cotton candy. It looks like there's a lot there, but there's really nothing. It's just fluff. We don't want that. We want something meaty, something they can sink their teeth into, something that's going to help them with the problem that they have. But on the other hand, nobody enjoys reading an academic textbook. I mean, whenever, I was in college or grad school, if I really enjoyed the subject, if I loved the subject, I might read, extra more than the professor assigned. But in most of my classes, if, they assigned a certain chapter to read, that's the only chapter I read, because it was so dense and you just slogged through. And you had to read things three and four times to even figure out what they were saying. So even though, a textbook is on the other end of the spectrum, there's a lot of information in there. It's very meaty, very weighty. Nobody enjoys it. great business books have to be both informative and entertaining, or at least interesting. And so whenever I start looking at, at the four things that you're selling in a business book, I see where the books that I've ghostwritten or that I've edited or that I've coached other authors through, the results, are something that they need their clients to get to. We have to make it interesting to read, or else they're never going to get through it. All of them want to, provide some kind of information. Otherwise, why are you buying the book? But the hope part is, I think that's the part that I've never really. I'm just blessed that I work with wonderful people who are excited about the future. So that hope kind of naturally infuses itself into the book. But looking back, I mean, those are the people that really, that they've done wonderful things with their book, because their book is based on the idea that life can be better, that there is something greater out there. And if you just know where to look and have a couple of ideas about which direction to start running in, that that you can enjoy that. I don't know if that answered your question, Ray, but at least I danced around the edges.
Well, it does. It does, Derek. That's good. And then I think I'm just thinking the next step for me when I get in, begin to work with authors. And a lot of times when I get the first draft manuscript, they may be 20 or 30 page chapters. And again, you're asking a lot for people, and particularly business people, whether or not you're talking about managers, or you're talking about entrepreneurs, or you're talking about salespeople. A whole lot of those people have ADD. And you combine that with the crazy schedules that we all have now, is they just don't have a lot of time to read. There are book lovers like you and I that take time to read. We have to do it or we're really in trouble. But for most of the world, that's not true. They pay $20 or $25 or $30 for a book to if that promise, that hope that she's being sold on the cover is there in the book. And so when you're selling, when I think of someone, if you're standing in an airport bookstore, or if you're giving a speech and the book is being sold in the back of the room, or if it's at a retail bookstore downtown or wherever it might be, there's a sales pitch on the back cover, on the flap usually. But when you open that table of contents, that's the bridge between editorial and marketing. And I spent a whole lot of time working with my author, just polishing that. Because the role and the function of that table of contents is not only to inform with clarity, that's the editorial part, but secondly, to persuade someone to take the next step, and that's usually to go in and look some time at the book. But if our readers, if your listeners would think, a lot of times they close up the book and walk to the checkout counter with their Visa card after they've read the table of contents. And so a lot of time that's the decision point. You either begin to do a bit more discovery, read about the author or get a feel for the book, or you put it back on the shelf, or you go to the checkout counter. So that table of contents is key. But if they flip in between, that's where I think the design and having a relatively open design and shorter chapters and shorter paragraphs. And we're not going to Hemingway with being a minimalist, but I think we're back to almost, you and I were talking briefly before about one of the things that people love about quotes is that they're short and people can grab the concept, the gem of the wisdom there. I'm down to the place now. A lot of times I recommend authors, ideally a chapter should be 5 to 8 pages. And so that someone can spend, 5 to 10 minutes reading that, at night or whatever, before they need to start, propping up their eyelids. They can put the bookmark in the chapter and head off to dreamland knowing that they've made an accomplishment. They've read one more chapter there. And if you ask people to read 20 or 30 page chapters, you're going to lose people, because the selling that you're doing, again, is getting, you're selling them, you're persuading them to turn the page and read the next chapter or read the next page. And then you're selling them all over again. If it's a 250 page book, you have 250 sales presentations to give.
I've never heard it put that way. That's funny. I have heard before that the purpose of the the purpose of one sentence is to get them to read the next. The purpose of a paragraph is to get them to read the next paragraph. The purpose of the page is to get them to read the next page. Purpose of the chapter, the next chapter. And then the purpose of the book is to get them to read the next book.
Yes, or I think of it in terms of selling or marketing again. I think the purpose is when they finish reading, and maybe even before, halfway through or two-thirds of the way through, if they purchased that one, they would think, I need to buy this for my 6 employees, or I need to give it to all my clients, or I need to give it to Sally Sue when she graduates from college next month, whatever. They begin to think who else could use the book, or maybe they want to build a class around it, or whatever. They begin to think, wow, this is fantastic. How else can I use this? And then a lot of times, I think it's the same phenomena. You know, when we go to a new restaurant and we just love it. I mean, we fall in love with this place and we start telling everybody we know. You know, we get on Facebook about it. You know, we tell all our buddies at work. And so that same, if a book is really good, they will have that same experience from the book. And there's where you get back to the very best selling of all, and that's word of mouth. And so that's one of the things I continually think about in the book is how you mentioned the word value before, and to create as much value as possible so that that person becomes so excited about it that they're going to become an evangelist for you.
Right. Ray, can we shift gears slightly and go from talking about great business books in general to talking specifically about the new, and again, I hesitate to say business book because it's so much more than that. But let's talk about Fired Up Selling. I mean, this is near and dear to your heart on a personal level. So let's talk about where you came up with the idea and what you're trying to accomplish with the book and what you feel like that you're selling the reader.
Well, it began, you'd mention it, leading in, Derek. It began as a hobby. I started collecting quotes a long, long time ago. I think I started collecting them on my hard drive maybe 12 or 15 years ago, actually starting them. But before that, I'd buy quote books, for my own personal enjoyment. And then a lot of our authors, as you know, authors like to use quotes a lot of times in books. And so it was a resource, and I always enjoyed working with others on that part. A lot of times I'd be the quote researcher. I'd have to go find the best quote. And so I had a ton of them on my hard drive. And this has probably been 6 or 8 years ago. And I thought, well, I'll do a little quote book. And so I went to Amazon thinking just to see what the competition is, do a little quick market research. And there were just hundreds of them. And I already should have known that. I had a bunch of those on my shelf. Was in my own show.
That was another
bright-eyed book idea. But I still kept collecting quotes. And then after probably 2 or 3 years, I stopped again and asked myself, who really needs quotes? Who more than anyone else, needs inspiration and encouragement? And I came up with two categories. The first was salespeople, and the other one is entrepreneurs, because those are the folks that are, they get kicked in the gut, they're swimming upstream, they're having people tell them, you're being delusional, there's no way you can do that, and so they really have to build up that inner courage to keep doing what their passion is and what they believe in. And I believe, you know, inspirational quotes and good quotes are essentially brain food. They help us frame and reframe our thinking. And there's a quote, in fact, we have it. It's a Norman Vincent Peale quote. We have it on the very back of the book. And it's a really short one again. It's change your thoughts and you change your world. Norman Vincent Peale. And so that's what, for me, quotes were and still are about even more, as they provide us a way. If we have something happening to us, experience that's not so good, or we're kind of getting down or whatever, you know, bringing in a new thought through a powerful quote can help us reframe that and think differently. And then if we're getting up in the morning or we're out on a walk and we're, you know, we've got some open headspace, a quote can help us. It can help us start a thought or a plan. It can help us actually frame our thinking. And so that's what got me started. And then after that, I had, you know, I got off into the idea about how to actually put together a book. And we could talk a little bit more about that later if you wanted. I used a crowdsourcing model, created a project called the Fired Up Selling Project. But let me shift over. Let me pull this selling thread that we were using just for a moment. You'd mentioned it just a moment ago about how the selling relates to back what we've been talking about, and that is selling. Let me just do the thumbnail on the project because it leads into this. The dilemma that I had was I had these huge number of quotes. And so I was first thinking I need to put 1,000 or so in the book to really give it a lot of value. And then a friend of mine told me, no. We were having a conversation, and he held up his finger, you know, with the number one. And I said, okay, you know, what does that mean? He said, one per page. And I thought about 30 seconds, and I said, you're right. I didn't do one per page in the book. Some of them do have, and the most on any one page is three. Because what I wanted people to do when they experienced the book is to read the quote and to sit with it and just to let them absorb what that author is sharing with them. And so then I thought, well, that's 250 or 300 quotes. That's even more of a challenge. You know, I had this huge dilemma about what to do then, how to pick these. And so I went back and forth for a number of weeks, and then I decided to find some people to help me judge these quotes. You know, and so I early had a name in the book business. We called them reviewers or readers. And I thought, well, you know, that's not a very good name. It doesn't have any magic. And so I came up with the word quote judges. And so what does a quote judge do? They judge quotes. I mean, it's pretty plain. And so, you know, I asked Roy and some of my other friends to, you know, help me find some quote judges. And so they, you know, put it out in their world, and we wound up with more than 1,200 people around the world signing up to be quote judges. And my intent there was to, these were my customers. They were sales managers, salespeople, people, professionals in the field, consultants, trainers, bloggers, and then a few quote lovers in there. I had some friends that love quotes, and I knew they'd want to be part of the project too. And so my intent was, rather than me second guess what my customers wanted, I was going to go ask them what they wanted. I mean, what a concept. Ask your customers what they want. And so,
well, we forget that as authors, I think, because with writing a book, we write, the way I tell my authors is that we write books from the inside out, right? We start within our own mind, then we try to get all these ideas out. But whenever we're selling a book, you have to flip it because your readers are coming from the outside in. They have to get through the packaging, and you were talking about the cover and the promise and the copy and the table of contents. They have to get through all of that before they actually get into the heart of the book itself. So it's funny, but whenever we're writing a book, it actually is a pretty novel concept to say, What do they want to buy?
Yes, it is. And it's, you know, the New York publishers, the publishing industry, and again, there's, you know, there's fiction and nonfiction world, and the fiction world is another whole different world. I think you approach that in a whole different way than when you're working in nonfiction and certainly business books.
Oh, yeah. Right.
But but even still there, you know, a lot of times authors, fiction authors, will go out and do readings with small groups, and they will have people read their manuscript early on and listen to that feedback. And the book world's been doing that a long time. And most of the New York houses will send out a manuscript to 2-3, quote, experts in the field. And a lot of times those are not people in the marketplace. They're real customers. Those are experts in the field. And so I decided to do something much larger than that. You know, we had more than 1,000 people ready to go. And so what I did, twice a week on Tuesday and Thursday morning, early, I'd send out a collection of 15 quotes. And for each one of them, we were using SurveyMonkey, and for each one of them, they would read the quote very quickly, and they would hit a button, okay, good, or great. And they'd go through, and it would take them usually about 5 or 6 minutes to give their verdicts on these 15 quotes. And over the life of the project, which lasted a year, they judged 1,005 quotes. And for the book, there are 324 in the book. We picked the very best to go in the book because each of when they're voting, each of those quotes have a score now. And so this is what I was getting to, and I needed to kind of fill in that background to give you the number one quote. And so here's the number one quote. In fact, this quote was voted number one 3 different times. It was at the very beginning of the project that I put this in one of the collections. It was voted number one that week. And then later, I can't remember what in between, we did another round, include some of the top ones. It was voted number one there. And then at the very end of the project, excuse me, Derek, we did, you know, kind of like a Sweet 16. We did a face-off deal, and it was voted number one there. And here it is. People won't remember what you say. People won't remember what you do. People will forever remember how you made them feel. You know who said that?
No idea.
Maya Angelou. Poet.
Oh.
And a very, very good poet. And so
Maya Angelou is amazing.
And so here, these salespeople, sales managers, you know, consultants, trainers, bloggers, selected poets, quote, as the number one. And so when you take that quote, you know, people won't remember what you do, or people won't remember what you say. People won't remember what you do, but they will forever remember how you made them feel. And when we think about that, that's not only, certainly that's the key to selling, because part of that is trust. In fact, one of the things we asked people during the project of the year, well, I gave them a list of 8 or 10 or 12 different qualities of the salespeople and asked him to rate them. And trust was number one.
Mm-hmm.
That these people were saying trust is the number one quality for a salesperson. And so that's part of how you make people feel. You know, people feel trusting. You also make people feel important. And you do that by listening and a lot of other ways. And there's a bunch of, as you know, there's a bunch of quotes in the book about that. And so let's look at those four. That quote, is there information there? Is there some concepts there? You know, what's the big idea? My shorthand for information is what's the big idea?
Mm-hmm.
And I think for that quote, the big idea is life is an emotional experience, not a logical experience. And when we're presenting information, a lot of times we get over into that left brain and we try to present it logically.
Yeah.
But how people experience life, and I'm underlining twice the word experience, they experience that emotionally. And I think that's in big letters, I think what Maya Angelou is telling us here.
Yeah, Ray, if I could throw something in the mix there, it reminds me of one of my favorite quotes. And I forget the author off the top of my head, but it said, we are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience.
Yes, I think that was Pierre Dechard, I think. I think that's his quote.
Because it speaks exactly to what you're talking about there, that we think in terms of you know, the physical world and facts and figures and statistics, but the life, whenever we think about life, real life, it's not over there in statistics and math land. It is in emotions and the feelings. The highlights of our life are not about whenever. It's about how we felt whenever something happened.
Yes, yes, exactly. And so I think that's the big part here. And then, the how-to, I think it's not explicit here in Maya's little quote, and I haven't counted the words. It'd be interesting to quote the words, probably, 20 words there, something like that. It's not a super short quote, nor is it a long one, but it does, I think, pique your curiosity to say, okay, how do I do that? How do I make people feel, and how do I want to make them feel? You know, when I call on my salespeople, how do I want them to feel? Or if I'm writing this paragraph or this chapter or this book, how do I want people to feel? And when I'm writing this email, how do I want people to feel when they finish? I think it gets you, and then I think you begin, when you're talking about emails, I think one big thing is how often you use the word I, as opposed to the word you. And it's amazing when you become conscious of that, and it sounds like you already are, when you start reading other people's emails, it's amazing how many times they use the word I and how few the times they use the word you.
It reminds me of in Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. Even back in the, what was that, the 1930s or 40s, he said they said that Ma Bell did a survey, and the most used English word, you know, whenever people were on the telephone, was I. So that has stuck with me. So every time I write an email, I go back and I look at how many paragraphs begin with the letter I, and it makes me, you know, stop and think about how much of this am I writing from my point of view, and how much of this. Is there some way to make this more about the recipient? I don't want to be the person on the telephone where the number one word is I.
Well, you've nailed it. You've nailed it, Derek. That is so true. I didn't know about that. That's very interesting. I'm not surprised at that. And I think the same thing probably true with the emails now. You're transferring a lot of telephone communication is in email form now. And
right.
You mentioned that you used the word frame before, and you and I could have a very long conversation about this. One of the things that's fascinated me for a number of years, and I keep buying books and thinking about it, is the idea about framing and what we do with framing, and particularly how we frame our words and what that framing does to the experience. First of all, the outer experience with the people, whether or not they're our spouse or children, what we're doing in a book, the speech we're giving, or whatever it is. And then secondly, that internal experience, that self-talk about how we frame our own self-talk and frame and reframe. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is reframing and getting, becoming aware and conscious about how we can reframe. And so I think the biggest frame of all, it's what I call super frames. And I think for me, the biggest super frame of all is the one whether or not you're coming out of the me, which is an I. The way you express me is the word I. And flip it around 180 degrees, and it's you. And I think is that I find myself, even though I've been aware of that for some very long time now, and I try to practice it, but I find myself regularly, almost every day, slipping back into that me frame and not flipping it out there enough and putting the frame around them. So let me go ahead and wrap this up. And certainly, am I selling hope there? I think hope is big time on that. We're back to the entertainment. You know, that is such a lyrical piece. It is poetry. You know, Maya was a poet, and so that is poetry.
Yeah.
And so that's you can tell I've just had a bunch of fun, you know, working with quotes, and they go back again to that Norman Vincent Peale. We're back to that quote that I was using there from is "Change your thoughts and you change your world." That's about framing. That's about using quotes as brain food to, you know, to help give us some courage and fortitude and to do what we need to do. And
well, like I was sharing with you before we jumped on the podcast, was that I think of them as gems, right? So there are these so much value in these tiny little pieces of words. I mean, there are people who can say more in a quote than I've sometimes tried to say in an entire chapter, and those. I think it's important because they're so succinct, they get straight to the heart of the matter. So you don't have to go through, the whole chapter and think about and mull over things. They get right to the heart of the issue and make you change how you think. Because how does that other quote go? But it says, change your thoughts, change your actions. Change your actions, change your habits. Change your habits, change your life.
Yes, yes, yes. That's so very true. It starts, the Greeks do that, and they talk about it, how we think changes our life. And Napoleon Hill, obviously, we think and grow rich, one of the best-selling, probably the best-selling, if you will, business, if you use the biggest tent, for business. It's really a personal development book, but it's also a, quote, a business book. It's probably I think it sold 30 or 50 million copies. It's probably the best-selling book, Think and Grow Rich. And the one, Derek, it fits with one thing. You were talking about the one thing before being one of your favorite books. And Gary uses, in the book, the concept of extreme Pareto. Pareto is the 80-20 rule that we've all heard for a long time. And what Gary talks about, which I think is one of the core concepts in the book, is that you squeeze it down one more step. You take it down to extreme Pareto. You take your focus down. You tighten it down so that you really focus. And I think that's what quotes do. They squeeze out so many of the words, and I think that's, on the jacket or the dust jacket of the one thing, we talk about how busy we are. So we're all just bombarded with thousands of pieces of information every day, and so that's one of the beauties of the quote book is that you can sit down, and if you're wary, you can read a couple three pages. You can look at the table of contents. Or you can go in the back and look at the subject index, this cross-reference. You can find something that speaks to you and spend 2-3 minutes, 5 minutes with it. Or if you want to sit down and, read, a few pages, you could do that. But it's back to the words you use. They're gems, and they're more like diamonds. Diamonds is one way to think about a gem. I mean, they are little diamonds, if you will.
Well, I got lucky. Well, I say lucky. Maybe it's a little bit of foresight, but I actually went and pre-ordered the book on Amazon. So as soon as it hit, they I don't know if they accidentally made a mistake, because the book actually, this is the big launch week for the book. I just happened to get a pre-order copy. So Fired Up Selling comes out this week. Ray, where all, I mean, in addition to Amazon online, where all can, where else can people find the book?
Well, Amazon's probably, it's discounted slightly, yeah, because it's just out, but it's a discount price, and if you're a Prime member, you get it free on Amazon, obviously. And so that's the easy way. You can also go to BarnesandNoble.com, and there's a whole bunch of other, BooksAMillion.com, a lot of people are selling it online. And then it's right now, I think starting this week on Tuesday, it should be at the very front of the store at Barnes & Noble, all Barnes & Nobles around the country. It'll be at the Hudson bookstores. If you're out traveling at the airport, you can buy it at Hudson's. It'll be out front and displayed there. So it's out in the world. We're going to see, you know, I'm sure like every other author, it's been a long, long time. I don't know, probably 30 years since I've authored a book. I did a few books for the New York Houses back a long time ago as an author. And so this has been a new experience, although I'm really not an author for this book. You know, there are 268 authors in the book and people that wrote these quotes. You know, my name's not on the cover of the book because I'm not the author. But about 2-3 months ago, I figured out that nobody else is going to be the author of this book, so I am going to have to step up and be the author. So, it was really kind of an odd experience to think, okay, I need to get in gear. And that's not unusual. One of the things that I find that authors do, they wait way, way, way too long to begin to think about selling. We're back to selling again. You know, I worked with my authors starting at least a year before and sometimes 2 years before putting together a marketing sales plan. And so I was guilty, you know, here. I waited really too late to, you know, begin to get in here. But I have a great group of sales folks that when we bring a book out, we just get, you know, great distribution all over the world with it. And our sales folks got really fired up about the book, and that when they took it to Barnes & Noble and Amazon, the other, you know, the people that buy books and decide whether or not a book gets on the shelves at Barnes & Noble and other places, you know, they got really excited about the book. And so there's a lot more books out in the world than what I thought there would be. So I'm sitting on my chair this week to, you know, next Monday I'll get, or next Wednesday, I guess, I'll get book scan numbers to know really how well the book did.
What's that saying about the cobbler's son goes barefoot? You know, we do, whenever we do so much for others, it's hard to remember to do it for ourselves as well.
Yeah, you're talking about me, Derek. Yeah.
And then, what's the teaser you put out about the new free service that Bard Press is going to start offering?
Well, we started just a few weeks ago, and one of the things when we were, you know, like I say, we went a year with these quote judges, and a lot of the quote judges voted every time, you know, twice a week, and they got, you know, they just loved the project. They loved reading the quotes. They loved giving us their verdicts. And so at the end, I said, you know, what else can we do? You know, you guys have been so great. You've been so helpful to me, helping me create this book. And we just learned so much beyond just deciding which quotes to put in the book. And they made it so much better book. There were a number of quotes that I thought were just fantastic that they just bombed. It literally just gave them awful scores. And so I also learned a lot about what's happening in the selling world today because mm-hmm. we had a comment section. And we got a lot of comments. And so for a year, we had an ongoing dialogue with all these quote judges. And so it was just – and so one of the things that came out of that conversation at the end was I knew that people didn't want to keep, you know, judging this many quotes over a long period of time. So I came up with the idea, and there's a bunch of them out there, you know, that they'll send you a quote a day and quote a day services. And, in fact, I subscribe to several. But I wanted to do one a little different. And so this is what, and folks said, yes, we love that idea. So what I came up with, the title of this one is 55 Second Fire Up. And the idea is every morning during the week, Monday through Friday, early in the morning in your mailbox, we will have waiting two inspirational quotes and two humorous one-liners to give you a little humor and to get you, you know, give you a kick in the seat of the pants every morning. And we rolled that out, I guess, 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it's free. I mean, it's if people want to sign up, they can go. Probably the easiest way, just to Google, go Google Fired Up Selling or Fired Up Selling Project, and they'll find a link, and then there's a sign up. They just, you'll fill in their name and email address and pop it over to us, and we'll add them to the file. And then so they'll start getting the – and so we went back. I was curious. You know, we're back to making the promise when we're selling, whether or not we're making the promise. One of the things that we can go in and look at SurveyMonkey and to see what's going on, we can look at the metrics. And so after, I guess, a week or so after it started, I thought, well, how will I go look and see whether or not people are really doing this in 55 seconds or less? And they were. I found a lot of 41s and 47s and 52s and 39s. And so nice. People really were going in and reading the quotes, and they're voting also. You know, now I added one. There's four buttons, awful, okay, good, or great. And so, and we're, you know, I continue to have a lot of fun now collecting quotes and putting them together to, you know, send out to folks every morning.
That's a treat for me because I love them. I try to, in my book, the business book Bible, I got away with this because I self-published. I am a professional writer, so I get a little bit of leeway, but mostly because I self-published and nobody could tell me no. I don't just start each chapter with a quote. I start each chapter section with a quote. And I've had people tell me that they learned more from the quote. And it's not from me. Everyone else. I go find an appropriate quote. That they learned more sometimes from the quote that started the section than they did from anything that I actually wrote in the section.
Yeah, that's not very good on for your ego, is it? But look who you're competing against. You're competing of some. It's tough. But again, you're back to the readers, and so that's one of the things. I think if you probably know that, and you probably that's part of your service or part of your consulting, coaching, writing. Work is that you. My guess is that you probably help people, you know, find really good quotes to mix into the blend. And because one of the things quotes are, we're back to that fourth thing. Quotes are entertaining. You know, that's one of the four things. I think people do find them entertaining.
I do. I try at the beginning of every chapter to go find a great quote. To start that chapter off, and we really, you know, we have to write the chapter and then edit the chapter and go through before we can find a quote that really sums it up. Sometimes we'll have some quotes off to the side and try to figure out where does this one. This is a great quote that speaks to a theme of the book. Does it fit anywhere at the beginning of any of these chapters? But yeah, I do. That's one of my little pet add-ons. That they don't realize they're getting is that I love to help take great quotes that just do something amazing for the world and bring them into authors' books to help them, to help people. Well, just like, you know, some of my readers do with my book, you know, sometimes get more out of that quote than they do, you know, two or three or four pages of reading the book itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I bet in this... The little book that you have now has a black cover with a big red apostrophe or a big exclamation point on the cover. I bet you might find a few quotes in there that would go in some of your books.
Oh, I already have.
Okay.
I love it.
Can't resist a little shameless promotion. Yeah.
No, it's not. It's not shameful if you don't have anything to be ashamed of.
Right. Well, Ray, this has been... like a quote.
uh, I'll coin it, but you know, maybe some, I'm sure I probably stole it from somebody else. But Ray, this has been great. Thank you so much for taking so much of your time, and you know, for delivering, you know, 30 years or more worth of publishing knowledge and writing wisdom into you know, the 30 or 40 minutes that we've been on the call. I really appreciate it.
Yes, well, Derek, it's been fun. As you can tell, I enjoy talking about this. So it's been a pleasure. So
awesome.
Until next time, stay fired up.
Fired up.
All right, good day. Right.